Menards is your one-stop shop for all your summer essentials. Whether you're stocking up on everyone's favorite snacks, making a patio perfect for entertaining family and friends, or getting ready to gather around the grill, Menards has everything you need for your get-togethers all summer long. Save big money now at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey everyone, just a quick note to say that you should expect spoilers for Masters of the Universe starting from the beginning of our Masters of the Universe review. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and in the past year, we've had a Running Man movie, a Predator movie, and now a Masters of the Universe movie. What is this, 1987?
Earlier.
Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
I have the power!
Two podcasts.
And Jeff Canetta.
My Masters of the Universe name is Man at Microphone.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Of course, those are all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing Masters of the Universe, a movie that cost $170 million. Guys.
And worth every penny.
Any guesses as to how much money it made this weekend? Around $30 million. So, rough start.
That's a sad amount.
Rough start for the Masters of the Universe.
Just play the audio. I don't know if you guys have heard the clip, but it's just He-Man saying, "You're a loser, Skeletor." It's amazing. Just play that on repeat.
Dave, that sounds like a real cringer.
Nailed it, Jeff.
Thank you.
Nailed it. Of course, we are going to start with some what we've been watching before giving you some weekly plugs and then moving on to our review of Masters of the Universe. You can always email us, by the way, at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Sometimes we talk about your emails at the top of the show. Sometimes we don't. Let's try getting straight into are what we've been watching this week today. Starting with me, David Chen, I had a chance to watch Scary Movie 2026, the new Scary Movie, otherwise known as Scary Movie 6, the 6th edition. This movie was number one at the box office this weekend. It made around $56 million. It is a huge hit, the biggest opening ever for Scary Movie. And I am curious, what is your guys's relationship with this franchise? Like, do you like these movies? Do you not like them? What is your opinion of these movies?
Kind of nothing.
Nothing.
I don't think I've ever seen one of them.
Oh, you haven't seen one of them?
I don't think I ever have.
Oh, wow.
Man.
Oh, wait. This was the era of Jeff not having fun, as we recall. This was the 1999 to early aughts era where Jeff poo-pooed all the big blockbusters.
Well, I was an acting student in college. All I did was read Shakespeare and like that wasn't
anti-fun.
Yeah,
Antifa.
It was no.
You were too refined for the likes.
I've never seen
for Men in Black or The Mummy or all the great stuff.
But I was.
You love those movies that have the visual gags, like the Zucker Brothers movies and those kinds of things, right?
I do. I love those movies. Yeah, I love those. I just never saw these ones. I never saw White Chicks. I never.
You're probably good with that White Chicks.
I just missed them.
So the Wayans brothers made Scary Movie 1 and 2. They were massive, massive hits back in the day. And then I'm not going to get into the complexities of it, but suffice to say, they were unceremoniously removed from the franchise. And the franchise was taken over, and then they made Scary Movie, I believe, 3, 4, and 5 without the Wayans brothers.
With the actual Zuckers.
The
Zuckers, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Or at
least and then, one like, of them. Yeah. Friedberg and Seltzer like took over the kind of epic movie, like all those kinds of movies that are just an endless string of references to other movies.
Ruined it.
Yeah, yeah. So with Scary Movie 6, the Wayans brothers are back. They are back in control of the franchise. And in my opinion, this movie is not that great. I was not a huge fan of Scary Movie. I do have to say that you know, I watched this movie in Portugal. The theater was about a third full, so it was like a decent number of people. And I think I probably got slightly more of the jokes than the other people, because, you know, there's some things that I don't think made the translation into Portuguese subtitles.
Yeah.
So I did feel like Robert De Niro in that Cape Fear scene where he's watching the movie with a cigar smoke and like laughing wildly while everyone's like,
"Your greatest nightmare.
What is this guy's deal?" But yeah, this movie, Scary Movie 6, first of all, let's talk about some positive things. Anna Faris is back in the Scary Movie franchise.
Where has she been? I love
Anna
Faris.
Been on TV, you know, yeah. And she's had a couple of starring roles in films. But she's been doing some interviews where she has a very poor self-image in the interviews. And she feels like Hollywood has really not treated her particularly well. And I completely understand that, because, you know, I understand why she might feel that way based off of her career, which, despite everything, has been pretty successful. But she's back here with Regina Hall and also the Wayans brothers. And it's like, hey, the original crew, the core four, is back, although they do make fun of that concept. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty positive. And I like seeing them, you know, back in the mix again. And if you are an Anna Faris fan, you know, this is one of the ways that you can get your dose of Anna Faris. Sadly, I think the movie does focus a lot on Shorty Meeks, the character played by Marlon Wayans, like a little bit too much compared to the relationship between Cindy and Brenda, who are Anna Faris and Regina Hall in the film. And like that's really the relationship that I think makes the movies work. And the movie does not focus as much on that relationship, sadly. But anyway, some of the visual gags are pretty amusing, you know, so it's not like there's nothing funny in the film whatsoever. But overall, the movie has a lot of topical humor, like really recent, like referring to Tiana Taylor losing the Oscar for One Battle After Another recent, which actually is kind of impressive how they got that in there. Yeah. And things of that nature. And I think that's going to horribly date the film. You know, like, I think it's going to make it age very poorly.
I think everything about the Scary Movie, like, I've seen these movies. They just never really meant much for me. But their jokes have always been, like, the thing that is happening now.
I guess, like, but
like, recent movie trends.
That's the nature of this.
The thing is, like, the thing is, when I think back to Scary Movie 1, there are many memorable sequences that are not that, right? And particularly the ending of Scary Movie 1, I think, is quite memorable. And that has nothing to do with topical stuff. It refers to other movies, like The Usual Suspects, for instance, you know, but I think those will stand the test of time in a way that like topical references do not. Also, there's a lot of jokes about, you know, it feels like an old man trying to be edgy, you know, like it's kind of how Scary Movie 6 feels like. It feels like we're going to make jokes about trans people and Gen Z and all their wacky genders and everything. And it just feels like, oh, this is pretty cringe and not particularly amusing in my opinion. So I did not find that this captured the magic of the original Scary Movies in the way that I would have liked, but it's not like a complete waste of time or anything. Mm-hmm. And clearly something about it is resonating with audiences because it's doing very well at the box office. So I thought Scary Movie 6 was okay to bad, not a total waste of time. But yeah, if you're looking for something that like makes you feel like how the original Scary Movies did, I don't think this rises to that level, sadly. All that said, Scary Movie 6 is out in theaters right now. Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something you've been watching. Actually, I should say we've all been watching this thing you're about to name.
Yeah, I leapt at the chance to check out the new series on Prime Video called Spider Noir. This is, I guess you would say, kind of a spinoff of the Into the Spider-Verse
movies
in a way. But it is live action.
No, it's not the same character, yeah, as Jeff was about to say, probably, right? Yeah.
It's not the same character?
It's not the same character as the Spider Noir in that.
Okay, but he's playing a Spider Noir, as we have seen. In the Spider-Verse movie.
It is similar, for one thing, this show takes place in the 1930s, and Into the Spider-Verse is modern day. And
well, but that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
And the character's name was different, I presume, right? So
did he ever say his actual name in that?
But then he's not then he's not Spider-Man anymore. Well, anyway, okay, fine.
Well, the point is, Nicolas Cage played the noir version of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, correct.
He's playing it here, live action.
Yep.
I love noirs. It's a subgenre that I tend to very much enjoy. And this is both a noir-y version of Spider-Man and a full noir tale. It is a a grizzled gumshoe who just happens to be Spider-Man. We're doing all the trappings of a noir story. A lot of the fun of this for me as a huge Marvel zombie from way back and a fan of Spider-Man is seeing the Elseworlds take on a lot of the, you know, rogues gallery of Spider-Man. For example, you know, you have a character named Kat Hardy, who is the femme fatale here. And, you know, anybody who knows Spider-Man knows Felicia Hardy is Black Cat in Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a lot of that fun twisting and inversions of expectations that you have of, there's a lot of characters that are analogs for characters that you would know from Spider-Man, but, you know, through the lens of this noir world, and all of that, very, very fun. The thing that, you know, right at the top we should talk about is, this, because it's on a digital streaming service, there is a cool feature that allows you to watch this either in full color or in black and white, and you can switch at any time back and forth, which I did quite frequently.
I did too. Wow. Yes.
And that's very fun. And, you know, noirs are, you know, right there in the title, noir means black. It's that look, that black and white look is synonymous with the style. And to have that ability to do that is really cool. And clearly this whole endeavor was shot thinking about the black and white version. It's very, it's lit very high contrast, even in the color scenes. And I think ultimately, I know you guys are going to get mad at me, but I actually preferred the color version.
I kind of agree, but we could talk about that.
Yeah. I loved how the color version is lit for black and white.
It's almost like Dick Tracy. It's almost like live action comic book, like super bright, like Technicolor.
Super high contrast, super wild color, super, you know, fun, very stark contrast with light and shadow and overly bright elements in the frame, cool camera angles. I think all of that stuff is a huge win for fans of this style, and it's done really, really well. And I, of course, understand why you cast Nicolas Cage if you can, because A, he voiced the character in the only other, you know, big screen version of this character we've ever seen. So he's already sort of put his mark on that character. And it's Nicolas Cage. He's a huge movie star. If you can get him, you get him. That said, he's 62 freaking years old.
And he's playing someone that's probably around 10 to 15 years younger than that.
Oh, I would say half his age. I would say this is a 31-year-old character.
Well,
played by a 62-year-old man.
I would believe
there are references to the fact that he's like over the hill in the show. Yes. So I do think it's in his 40s and 50s.
In this time period, 31 was over the hill, Dave.
That's true.
Fair enough.
Whatever the case, it is a dramatic difference.
Right.
It is a dissonant, and I could not, you know.
Yeah.
It is one of those things I couldn't get out of my head because he looked, you know, this is not, they don't de-age him. They de-age him the old fashioned way with makeup and dyed hair. You know, there's no digital de-aging. He is a 62-year-old man with dyed hair.
It's just the way he moves. Makeup. You can tell. Yeah.
And and every time, you know, this movie, the show also, I think, has a little bit of that Surf Dracula thing where it's like, we don't get a lot of Spider-Man until several episodes in. I'm like, I want my Spider-Man. Where's my Spider-Man? And this is doing more, you know, gumshoe detective stuff. And that's, I enjoyed it. But when we do get the Spider-Man, that ain't Nicolas Cage, bro. That ain't 62-year-old Nicolas Cage. And it's hard for me to suspend my disbelief on this one because he looks every bit of 62 to me in this. And I get it. You know, he's doing great Nicolas Cage stuff. He is leaning hard into the noir trappings. You know, he's even doing the voice sometimes when he talks like this, see? And he's doing that, you know.
But he gets to be wacky. He gets to be the wacky Nicolas Cage that that we're there to see too.
And it's so I'm conflicted on that point because it's like, I get it. You're going to cast Nicolas Cage if you can. And it's fun to see him, but also wildly wrong for this part. And hard to get away from the fact that this is supposed to be a superhero, young superhero, and he's, 62. That said, I'm curious what you guys thought. I'm not finished with this series. I'm like 5 episodes in. I very much am having a good time with it. It is different. Yeah. It takes Spider-Man in some cool places, and it does the noir thing, I think, really well. And you get Brendan Gleeson chewing scenery as the bad guy. You get some cool action-y bits. I really enjoy it. I'm wondering what you guys think.
Devendra, your thoughts on Spider-Noir on Prime Video?
Yeah, I'm really digging it. This is also one of those things where I'm like, how does this exist? Why does this exist? Yeah. Is this mainly Amazon being like, hey, well, they had this idea, right? Lord and Miller, exec producers on the show too. But it seems like there was the idea, and Amazon's out there just throwing money at any niche geek thing you can. We're going to talk about another one for the main review this week, but it seems like those things. I don't know why this show exists, but I'm glad it does, because it's well written, it's funny, it's Nick Cage, like, do it. The dissonance is there, but also, like, it's fine. Like, we've seen older characters try to play, like, do more younger, nimbler things. This environment is completely, like, probably a really easy thing for him to shoot. Like, come to a soundstage in LA and you will never have to leave the stage. We will digitally recreate New York and you never have to go anywhere. You could go home, you know, when shooting is done. But it's a lot of fun. I love the look of it. I love the experimentation of doing both really high contrast black and white plus the super, super technicolory stuff. And I've rewatched a couple of scenes. In the first episode, there's a singing scene with like the femme fatale character. And like, I saw that in the black and white. It's very good. Saw that in the color. I think it pops a little more to me. That's just because I grew up in the color era. Sorry. And it's also like really good, interesting color that looks great on modern TVs and modern monitors too. So just like, it looks good. I cannot deny what my eye prefers right here. But I'm very glad you have the choice. I'm glad that you could like flip in the middle of things. I wish more series kind of did this, because that would be kind of cool. Beyond that, like, I love all the characters, love the more and more is in this. I'm only a couple episodes in, but I'm going to finish it because it's so unique and so different.
Yeah. I got into an argument with Dan Trachtenberg of all people, but about the old man of it all. And he was like, you know, Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones and hey, you know, Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible is that age. And I was like, yes, but in those cases,
they're a little more like they work out at least.
Well also the don't work character out. Is that age, right? Yes, it's right. Old Indiana Jones. You know, even Ethan Hunt may be, you know, the last stop of all evil, the last buttress of all evil, but he's no one's denying he's an older dude. And there's just, everybody just treats him like he's 35 in this movie or in the show. And that's the harder part for me. It's like, the character he's playing is not his age.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also Tom Cruise actually does a lot of his own stunts, not all of them, but a bunch of them. And also you're not intercutting Nicolas Cage with you are intercutting Nicolas Cage with CGI version of his body doing all these acrobatics. And it's just a very bizarre, or someone else wearing the suit and, you know, doing all the acrobatics. And it's a very bizarre juxtaposition.
There's a few scenes where we have him in the suit and he takes the mask off, and you always know the scenes that Nicolas Cage is actually in the suit because it's very different body type.
I'm a big fan of the show, and I watched it in black and white. I don't think it's a travesty to watch it in color. The idea of a two versions of the movie that you can switch between is very intriguing. I'm curious to see if there's some version of this where like one in the future, there might be some version where you can choose between two versions of the film and like it's like a fundamentally different experience. Like you see things in a, mm-hmm. in a different way. It reveals things to you that you wouldn't have otherwise seen, which I don't think color quite rises to that level personally.
I will say there a couple of times I did this. There was a scene, like a exterior shot of a hotel in the black and white. You have no idea what time of day it is. It's very unclear.
Yeah.
And then true. I switched to the color version. It's like,
true.
Oh, this is twilight.
Right.
This is almost nighttime. And I cannot even tell that in the black.
Also, okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
I found it to be pretty interesting when I thought I knew what color, you know, her dress was, for example. And then you realize, oh no, I was way off.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Fair. That's fair. I wonder if there's a way to do that where it's like, narratively it tells you something, you know, you must watch both versions because one gives you one story and one gives you the other. Anyway, I will say that my wife actually really liked the show. We watched the show and we both preferred the black and white, and we watched basically the entire thing in black and white. We didn't even switch, but it's a cool feature that they let you switch. I think the midsection of this show drags a little bit.
I agree.
But other than that, this is a blast. I mean, it is, you're watching, if you like Nicolas Cage's acting style, if you like watching Nicolas Cage be wacky and out of control and just really unchained, that describes me. I love that. Then I think you will enjoy Spider-Noir. This gives him an opportunity to do a bunch of really cool, wacky stuff. And that alone makes it worth it. Plus, it's just a really beautiful show, especially in black and white. I just think, wow, this is like one of the most beautiful shows on TV. Just the way it's lit, the way some of these shots are designed. It's really cool. So I'm a big fan of Spider-Noir. I don't know if they're going to make a second season. As of right now, I don't think it's been renewed yet. My understanding is the show was extremely expensive, like in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I'm curious whether or not it'll be worth it, but it does seem to be a big hit. So I would recommend it very strongly as well. It's Spider-Noir. All three of us were fans, and it's something we've been watching this week. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more What We've Been Watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Zvox. Hey, are you like me? Do you have trouble hearing the voices when watching movies or TV shows? I'm not saying it's because of age. I'm saying it because maybe it's because of age. I don't know. Who knows? It doesn't matter why. I have a hard time hearing the voices, making out the words. Modern day films and TV shows, maybe it's a sound mixing thing. Certainly not my age. But if you're like me, more and more people are like us. This is more and more common, having to use subtitles, which is what my wife and I frequently do, or crank the volume just to understand what the actors are saying, even if you don't have hearing problems. If you are tired of constantly reading subtitles, rewinding, or asking your companion, whoa, what did they just say? There's a fix. There's a fix to all of that. And it's an AccuVoice soundbar from Zvox. Zvox's soundbars use patented technology called AccuVoice that lifts voices from background music and sound effects, making the dialogue crystal clear, easy to understand, even at low volumes, which is often the volume I have to use because my kids are asleep. These soundbars are also great for shows with accents, British accents, sports broadcasts with loud crowd noise. You can hear it. So, if you or a family member struggle with voices on TV, visit Zvox.com and check out their lineup of AccuVoice soundbars. They offer a 60-day home trial plus free shipping. And right now, the Filmcast listeners can save 20% on any new soundbar by using Filmcast at checkout. Makes a Father's Day or birthday gift too. Zvox, Zvox.com with Filmcast, Filmcast, at checkout. It saves you 20%.
All right, Devinder Hardware, hit us up with something you watched this week.
Yeah, I've been seeing promos for Deli Boys Season 2. Did not realize Fred Armisen is joining the show. Camille Nanjiani is in this series. I only watched a couple episodes of the first one. So over the past week, I have mainlined Deli Boys. Let me tell you.
And what is Deli Boys, for those who don't know?
This show is a lot of fun. It's about two Pakistani brothers. Their father has owned a chain of delis. He's like, the father's already a successful businessman. In the very first episode, like in the very first scene, this is not a spoiler, they're on a golf course. Father dies by a golf ball. Popped in the head. Like a really, really interesting kill method there, by the way. The brothers are heartbroken, but now they have to take over their business. Big reveal. The father is actually the head of a criminal enterprise. He's not just a deli owner. He is like a major drug runner, or he has a drug empire. He's pushing cocaine through the delis. It's about these two brothers just trying to come to terms with it. So this show's hilarious. It's a lot of fun. It both mixes like hyper-violent gangster stuff while also being genuinely funny, because it's there's a bit of Succession in there. You've got the two brothers. One is a bit of a, you know, kind of a loser, kind of like doesn't really work hard. And the other is the studious guy who thought he was taking over a deli business, who thought he was going to be the straight-laced guy. And it's them being like, oh, now we are kind of in the middle of a drug empire and all this stuff was happening that they did not even realize. I like the leads, Asif Ali and Sagar Sheikh, quite a bit. But I think for me, the star of the show is Purna Jagannathan, who has been in many TV series, but here she plays a character named Lucky Auntie. She was in Never Have I Ever as well, and Big Little Lies. She's popped up in a lot of TV shows. But the first episode starts off with her as like a very, you know, well-to-do, well-behaved Pakistani South Asian auntie who's taking care of these boys. And it's quickly revealed that no, she's a freaking gangster. She's out here shooting dudes in the head. She is doing cool shit. Very cool character, I have to say. So I think the first
season, it's a comedy.
It is a comedy that can be violent at times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a Barry there, maybe, because there are twists and turns. It doesn't get as dramatic as Barry, but there are twists and there are things like there was an episode that actually brought a little bit of a tear to my eye, kind of what it meant for the characters. It's like the origins of that character of Lucky Auntie. That was kind of sweet, I thought. So yeah, this is it's just a really, really fun show, like crime comedy. They're swearing. There's a lot of blood. Like, it can be violent at times. I feel like there's a bit of Breaking Bad in here. But you never get to see, like, I don't know, like a South Asian, you know, family get to do this. I feel that's all kind of cool. And season two builds upon, like, what worked really well in season one. But then Fred Armisen appears. Fred Armisen as a romantic interest for Purna Jagannathan's character. And I love a weird Fred Armisen. When Fred Armisen pops up in something, he's just like a little weirdo. He was in, he did like one episode of like Broad City, you remember? Just mm-hmm. like a little weirdo. Weird little Fred Armisen is kind of hilarious.
Devendra likes his little weirdos.
My little weirdos. And he gets to really lean into that in this. He is a casino owner named Max Sugar in the second season. And it's a lot of fun. So if you like crime comedies, if you want like a different spin on things, if you just want to see people who look different doing like a crime series, I think it's generally great. And I like the, you know, Kumail pops up in season two. There's a lot of other people. Tan France is in this. Lily Singh pops up in season two as well. Kevin Corrigan. I love Kevin Corrigan when he pops up in anything. So this is a funny show. Well written. And I think like it's worth checking out if you were interested in this type of things. It's created by Abdullah Saeed. And I wish I gave it a shot, like a bigger shot earlier, because it is genuinely great. But now you can get right into season two, which just premiered on May 28th.
Very cool. Yeah. So that's Deli Boys, season two of which has just hit Hulu, I believe.
It's on Hulu. You know, it's Hulu, but you get it through Disney Plus. Hulu, the app, doesn't really exist anymore.
Are you guys using the Hulu app anymore? Or are you mostly using Disney Plus?
I think they've
Plus?
Killed like, it. They've kind of...
No,
I've been using the app.
The app will die. They are actively trying to get you to just do it all in Disney Plus. But yeah, I had a thing where I had like two separate accounts and it was really annoying. So I just stopped using the Hulu app. That will die officially soon.
Because they're the same company. And so, they're now basically
Hulu is a
company.
Section within Disney Plus right now. Yeah. So you can access all those episodes there.
It's so confusing that we have like section brand names within these apps now, right? Like Paramount Plus with Showtime and you know, Disney Plus with Hulu.
And if you go to Apple TV, it just like surfaces all the stuff from the other ones. And you're like, what is even... Is this here or is it there? Where is this?
It's kind of a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because we're consolidating all the companies into basically one. It'll eventually just be one mega entity, right? Is where this is all going.
I mean, it's so crazy that we all cut our cords and we're so patted ourselves on the back about how brave we were to cut our cords. And
this was good. This was bound to happen. Like, I feel like people keep saying that, Jeff, but this is what was going
to
happen.
But it's hey, can we go back? Can I go back to paying like $500 a month for cable? And then we have like,
no, it was like $100. It was like $100 for cable.
It was $100 for cable. Yeah.
A billion channels. Yes. Now I'm paying $30 a month for one channel. And I'm doing that 8 times.
I think the quality to noise ratio on streaming now versus cable is a lot higher. Like I never really paid for like the big cable packages, but there was a lot of garbage. There was a lot of garbage.
There was a lot of garbage. But then there was that one night when you're like, look at this weird ass show that
look
I found.
At this TV that I must see tonight.
Except that's broadcast TV, and you could have gotten that for free. You didn't need cable for that at all.
That's fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Deli Boys. Something
Deli Boys.
Something Devendra Hardwar has been watching this week. All right, folks, I had a chance to watch In the Gray. Have you guys heard of this movie, In the Gray?
No.
No?
That's where I live now.
In the Gray? You guys have heard of this movie? Okay, so this movie is, you guys may or may not have heard, Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie likes to make movies.
Dave, you don't have to say the title. You just say, Guy Ritchie did a thing. Here's the new Guy Ritchie. That's all you have to say. I'm like, okay, yes. I recall seeing this.
Another 3 months have passed since the last time we talked about a Guy Ritchie movie. So the new Guy Ritchie movie is out.
Yeah. The title is inconsequential. It doesn't mean anything. It's just Guy Ritchie, Henry Cavill? Yes. I'll see this at some point.
I saw this meme I hate describing memes, but I'm going to try it. It's on one side, it was, you know, Henry Cavill fans online, and it's like the most intense cheering people ever. And then Henry Cavill fans in the theater, and it's like complete empty field. Right? And people love Henry Cavill online. People love Henry Cavill on podcasts like the Filmcast. But
people
when it
like
comes
the
time
like the idea of Henry Cavill.
But when it comes time to actually show up, Devendra Hardwar, you didn't even know the name of this movie. This movie...
That's not Henry Cavill's fault. That is Guy Ritchie's fault.
It's not
this
Guy
movie
fault.
Was in theaters for about 10 days, and it made around $5 million total.
That's the Guy Ritchie.
So it made as much movie
Give
as...
Give that man Aladdin. That man should make Aladdin, the man who makes returns like this.
It made as much money as Obsession did in about one day this week, in its entire run. And In the Gray. Okay, so I'll just briefly talk about what In the Gray is. It is the latest Guy Ritchie film starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Isaac Gonzalez, Henry Cavill.
Wait, that's a nice combo. Isaac Gonzalez is in this?
Yes. Gonzalez.
I will watch anything with Isaac Gonzalez.
Fisher Stevens is in this.
Fisher Stevens.
Just get to the theater.
He's
now.
Still getting work, that guy? Good for him.
Still getting work.
Yeah. Isaac Gonzalez plays somebody whose job it is to pursue rich people who borrow money and don't return it.
Ooh. And look extremely hot while doing it.
Yeah. She doesn't deal in extremes. She doesn't deal in like the black and the white. She deals in the gray, you see, which is the name of the movie.
Oh,
because these rich people,
gray.
They set up like shell companies in international areas. And so it's like they're in this thicket of laws that they're trying to use to hide their money and such.
Just sidebar. This is the problem with Guy Ritchie movies, is indistinguishable titles. Nobody cares what In the Gray means. You forget it the minute you hear it. Like, I've seen the trailer for this multiple times. Title has evaporated from my mind.
It's a terrible title. And not only that, but like, what I find hilarious about Guy Ritchie films is they are very, very silly. Like, nothing about this movie makes any goddamn sense, really. The plot is ridiculous. The characters are barely drawn at all. But then he is directing it like it is the most serious thing ever, including the title, including the score. The score is always like, it's like dun, 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 dun. It's like very like he's taking it very seriously, right? But it's like some of the stupidest stuff imaginable.
Partially what I like, by the way. It doesn't help that the studios market all of his movies in exactly the same way. It's like they have a Guy Ritchie trailer template, Guy Ritchie marketing template. We're just going to do it again this year. It's going to work this time.
You can't, guys. Just press the Guy Ritchie button again.
Press the Guy Ritchie button.
You can't blame them, though, Division. They have no time to come up with a new one. They're like, another one on the. Just use the same one from last time.
Okay. His last movie was called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Let's have a. That was at least a title you could kind of remember. Also followed The Gentleman, which was not confusing at all. In the Gray.
Don't get it confused with the Netflix original series, The Gentleman, Devendra, by the way.
Also after The Covenant. Just that. What are you doing? His last title was Wrath of Man. Come on.
I mean, The Covenant is a very strange movie. You guys know about that? Have you guys seen The Covenant?
You talked about it. I do kind of want to see that at some point.
The Covenant is this movie about how the U.S. abandoned the people who helped us in Afghanistan. And it's this fantasy about how, well, actually, this one guy went back and tried to, like, help the Afghanistan guy. Like, you know.
Are you explaining to us a movie that we reviewed here on the show?
No, we didn't review The Covenant.
No, he talked. Dave talked about it.
I watched it, too. Oh, okay. I definitely watched this movie. I feel like we reviewed it, but I certainly watched this movie, and we talked about it.
That's the Guy Ritchie experiment, Jeff. Maybe you watched this. I don't know. Maybe that happened. By the way, the movie before that was Operation Fortune.
Ruse de Guerre.
The last good title a Guy Ritchie movie has had was
Wrath of Man. Yeah, I mean, that's actually not a bad title. It's kind of catchy, you know?
His two upcoming movies are Viva La Madness, which is a pretty good title.
That's a good title.
And then Wife and Dog. Like, if I tried to make up a joke bland title, I wouldn't achieve what Wife and Dog gets.
That's pretty
Guess
rough.
What happens in Wife and Dog? Anthony Hopkins is in that movie. What is happening? Yeah. Anyway,
does he play wife or dog?
By the way, Carlos Bardem is in this film, famous Spanish actor and brother of Javier Bardem.
Ah.
I have to say, though, in my opinion, Javier is a better actor. I'm just going to put that out there.
Wow.
At least
on the Bardems.
At least if you can judge based off of this film, which maybe you cannot.
You're saying it's a high bar, Dem.
High bar for Dem. Yeah,
that's pretty good. Just extemporized, huh? Just like off the dome, that one.
It's the improv training over there. Yeah.
Okay, guys, do you guys know when you watch a heist film, the part of the movie where they explain all the parameters of the heist? Where they're
the best part. It's the best part.
Imagine if a movie was just 70 to 80% that.
I'm in. Oh, yeah. You're selling me on this. I like that.
Are there quick cuts? Is there like a banging soundtrack?
We enter in media res in many situations.
Is it going to show me what's going to happen as they describe it happening?
Yeah, is there a little model or visual aid to help me know where we are in the building at any point?
One of the things that I thought was really kind of hilarious was Isaac Gonzalez is like is in danger, or sorry, you know, because she's like facing off with dangerous people, and so there's a huge part of the movie that is, hey, we got to get her into this location, and then we need to figure out a way to get her out. And so they map out three different possible exfiltration routes, and then they're like, and then they show you the three routes, and I'm like, why are they like in detail? Like they walk through them in detail, and I'm like, why are they doing this? Because we know only at the end of the day, only one of these is going to end up being used. And well, I'll just say that they find a way to make that time worth it. Basically, a lot of the movie is, and then we do this, and then you do this, and then, as you said, Devendra, cutting it with them actually doing it. You know?
Oh yeah.
If you like that stuff, which this movie is mostly that.
This is why I watch Guy Ritchie movies, despite them being mostly indistinguishable. So yeah.
I will also say that the action is pretty solid. Like, Guy Ritchie, I think, does solid action, and this one is no different. There's a lot of action that's on, like, ATVs and motorcycles, and it's all shot really, like, almost like Michael Bay adjacent in terms of how much movement and how kinetic the camera is. So I actually had a good time with this. And by the way, guys, did I mention that it's 90 minutes? I think it's like 93 minutes.
Love that.
You're in and out as efficiently as the guys in the movie.
Love it. Love it.
So
you're barely in the gray.
It doesn't have time to hit the gray. It just
you're out of the gray. You're right out of it.
Leaves your brain.
Now you're out.
It describes the feeling of watching a Guy Ritchie movie, not in your gray. It just gets out of there.
So yeah, if you're looking for a complete mindless action film that will leave no residual traces in your brain whatsoever, then I think In the Gray is a great option. It's on video on demand.
It's that moment when you pop open a can of soda. It's that first sip. It's all bubbles. It's all fizzy. That's a Guy Ritchie movie. Mm-hmm. That's that feeling, the tickle in your brain.
Really? I think it's more like you drank an entire 20-ounce Coca-Cola and you're like, oh, that doesn't feel great. But it
was tasty when it went down,
but now I don't feel good about myself.
That first sip is good. That first sip is good. And then you drink. Oh, this is a 2-liter bottle. Uh-oh. Yeah.
So it's fun. It has nothing to say about anything at all. And to the extent that it has stuff to say, it's completely incoherent. But you get to see really attractive people doing cool things, being very competent, lots of explosions and gunfire, competently filmed, you know? And if that's what you're looking for, which maybe you are, The Gray,
Isaac Gonzalez
on VOD,
that's all you need to say,
is probably going to do it for you. So that is one thing I've been watching this week. Let's take another break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, Devendra, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
I thought you were going to be watching this, Dave, because you were making preparations for it.
I haven't gotten around to it yet, but it is on my list. I was literally thinking of watching it. I was deciding between watching Cape Fear or In the Gray before today's podcast, and I decided, you know what? Let's do a movie. But I'm going to watch it tonight or tomorrow. It's like on my list. Yeah. But yeah, but I prepared for it by talking about the movie last week.
Awesome.
You have actually gotten a chance to watch Cape Fear on Apple TV, right?
The Apple TV Cape Fear, and I have to say, I'm really, really digging it. But you have to lean in to the maximalism of what they're doing, right? Mm. Because even the Scorsese Cape Fear, that is an overcranked movie. Everything's just like way heightened. The music, the sort of like tension, what is actually, it's just like a crazy story that's like gone way overboard. And this version is has been developed by Nick Antosca, I forget how you pronounce his name, but I just talked about the other thing he's doing. He did that series that's on Shudder right now. So I recently talked about a thing that he just did. Very cool to see him like have multiple projects on TV. And yeah, this one stars Amy Adams and Patrick Wilson. Javier Bardem is Max Cady. And I have to say, I feel like you watch A Cape Fear. I have not seen the first adaptation of the book, but you watch like that movie, you're there to see De Niro perform.
Yeah.
You're there to see him chew the scenery. That was always the thing I loved so much about the like Simpsons version of it too. It's just like you give Frasier a chance to really ham it up, and it's a lot of fun. And this series, it sets up the family. It's a family of two lawyers. Amy Adams' character was the one originally defending Max Cady, but he still ended up going to prison. She ends up marrying the prosecutor, who's Patrick Wilson. It is set in Savannah, Georgia. I did not realize that. And I have to say, I bring this up every time. It's close to my heart every time I see something in Savannah, because it's just a lovely city that is so like distinct. It just looks beautiful. So you've got Savannah vibes. You've got Amy Adams with her Southern accent, or at least like a heightened Southern accent that feels very authentic to me. And I think like it sets up their family as being like, there are problems. The son is kind of kind of aimless, is in trouble, is probably into drugs or something. The building tension, though, is just like, when is Max Cady going to appear? When is Max Cady going to appear? And the very first episode of the show just does it really well. Just like does like the slow dread buildup of it. It starts off with an extreme act of violence. You're like, why is this lady shooting herself in the head? I don't know. All will be explained later. It's very gross. It's very much like,
wow, so
kind of beautiful.
Martin Scorsese version was also quite graphic, I thought.
Yeah.
And seems like the TV show continues that trend. Yes.
It definitely continues. There are chopped limbs. There are things that get like it kind of builds up. But if you liked Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men, if you liked Javier Bardem in Skyfall, this is a show for you, where he just gets to be both kind of charming, and he's still like, he's a good looking man. He's not like, the thing about No Country is they kind of uglified him. It made him a little more terrifying. But you've got a good looking man who knows how to lurk in the shadows. There is a scene where he like first appears to Amy Adams' character after being let out of jail. And it's just him in like half shadow. And it's just like, that's so good. And then he walks up to a stage she's on, and he just like owns the room. And it's freaking like, it's Javier Bardem doing what he does. Like, I don't know, creepy, sexy thing. Like, there's a great energy to it. I've only seen a couple episodes so far, but I am on board. I would just say you have to be on board for the tone of this thing, because it doesn't always make sense. It's way over the top, but that is Cape Fear. That is kind of like the draw to it, is to see like a very, very heightened kind of like psychosexual noir, practically, or like a modern noir. So I'm really digging it. I kind of love how it's shot. I love the setting. I like these people. Amy Adams and Patrick Wilson are a very believable couple living in a beautiful Savannah mansion. Like, I'm here for the just for the environment of it. It's fun. It's just a lot of fun. So I highly recommend this if you are into Javier Bardem chewing on scenery.
Very cool. I cannot wait to check this out. Cape Fear is on Apple TV. It's something Devendra Horror has been watching. Jeff, I assume this is not going to be on your radar, is my guess, right?
I'm not super compelled to check it out. Although I do like how we've come down very securely on which Bardem we prefer on the show. We've got made that very clear this episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But no, I'm not. I've never seen the original, and it's just not something that I'm particularly drawn to, but if you guys tell me I need to watch it, I will.
I don't know if it's a must watch, but it's like you can see why the original was so popular too, because it's very much like, oh, safe nuclear family unit.
Right.
Nothing can go wrong here. You've got an escaped madman criminal trying to destroy your family.
Right.
It feels like it was speaking to like heightened fears of the 90s in a way. And this one is kind of doing similar things.
Yeah. But I feel like that is such a much more potent message in the 90s than it is today, right? Because I feel like there's so many threats to the nuclear family today that like the idea of a serial killer feels overblown, honestly. Like, there's other things that are potentially more likely to damage a nuclear family. And so anyway, I'm really curious if this new show will have anything to say. So Nick and Tosca did do Murdoch Death in the Family on Hulu, which is a show I talked about recently.
Yeah.
And that was pretty good, I thought. And he's kind of been in the TV world for quite a while. So it's cool to see that he's getting his bite of the apple in terms of, creating a big, like, high profile show on Apple TV. So
he also did a brand new Cherry Flavor, which I talked about when that came out on Netflix. That was also wild, kind of crazy show, very much not in the same vein as this, but it is cool to see him like still doing work. I talked with him way back when he was doing Channel Zero at Engadget, so you can find it in your review there. Yeah.
Damn, so you've been following this guy for a while, man.
Yeah, wow. 10 years, man.
Cool, cool. All right, that's Cape Fear on Apple TV, and that's something Devendra Harder has been watching. I cannot wait to see it. I want to mention something that I watched this week. It's called Buffet Infinity. Have you guys heard of this movie?
I've heard
Buffet
the title.
Infinity.
Yeah.
All right. So Buffet Infinity, this is actually directed by somebody who I believe is a listener to the show, Simon Glassman.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And essentially, this is a comedy horror film that is told entirely. It's a, the entire 90-minute film is told through mock television commercials. And so you know how when you in the 90s, you ever fall asleep in front of the TV and then you woke up at like 2 a.m. and there's all these like extremely cheap commercials from like local restaurants playing on TV.
That's why cutting the cable was a mistake. You never have that experience anymore.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I remember there was actually a website that was like it simulated what it was like to fall asleep with the DVD still in the player. And what would happen is if for those who don't know how DVD players work, whenever you got to the end of a film, the movie would end and then the DVD menu would then start playing. And so then, and depending on how like bombastic the DVD menu is, it could wake you up. Right. So anyway, memories of the 90s, guys. We really had everything back then.
The IMDb for Buffet Infinity says it echoes the Canadian comedy classic SCTV, which I adored as a kid.
Yep.
I would say if you liked Too Many Cooks, right? Mm-hmm. The 2014 horror short film on Adult Swim. I also think...
Is it horror? I guess it is.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite... One of those things that they did is a short film called Unedited Footage of a Bear. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yep.
Incredible. Like, mind-blowingly good, in my opinion. Unedited footage of a bear, mind-blowingly good.
It felt like that. This is like the last throes of when the internet was good. Those videos, you know?
So... The way it works is you're just watching these commercials from this, I think it's a city in Canada. And as the commercials go on, you see that there is a sinister alien force that's taking over the town and you experience it through the commercials. And if you liked the, you know, the Too Many Cooks and the unedited footage of a bear, I think you'll find a lot here to appreciate. I will say, I think that it was tough to sustain the entire 90-minute runtime. Like, one of the things that made Too Many Cooks and Unedited Footage of a Bear good was they were short. Like,
Too Many Cooks isn't that short. Well, shorter than 90 minutes.
Yeah, shorter than 90, you know, like 10, 20 minutes, right? Like, and so you have an idea and then you see kind of their spin on the idea and then it's over. Whereas this is like, after I got it, you know, 20 minutes in, it just continues to be more and more commercials. And I will say that they nailed the aesthetic of some of these commercials. I mean, the voiceover, the music, the fact that it looks like it's VHS, like they've really got certain elements of the aesthetic correct. And that's really impressive. And so I really appreciate that. I appreciate, you know, how dark some of these ads are and how unsettling it is. One of the things that's great about things like Too Many Cooks, things like Unedited Footage of a Bear, and things like Buffet Infinity is it takes something that is supposed to be completely innocuous, right? Like, the reason why I think these are so effective is because when you watch a commercial for allergy medicine or a commercial for insurance or whatever, your brain kind of has these associations of, oh, that's... I know what that is. That's boring, anodyne, inoffensive. Like, there, no chances will be taken with whatever this piece of media is going to be. And so such that when you watch something that does disrupt that status quo, like these things that we've mentioned do, it is really unsettling. And so I do think that there's a lot that this movie does along those lines that I think is effective. But yeah, for me, it got a little bit long in the tooth in terms of like, because we're seeing the same places do different ads throughout the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm going to say 1 to 2 dozen businesses, roughly, you know, do the same ads over and over again or do different ads, but it's like the same kind of business. And so it's not like every single ad in the whole thing is different. You're seeing kind of how these different businesses are impacted by the thing that's going on out there. And so by the end, I was a little bit like, okay, I think I got it. And it did get a little bit long for me. That said, bold idea for a movie, a really ambitious idea for a movie. And they clearly took a lot of care in getting some of these commercials right when it comes to how it looks and feels. So a lot to admire here, and definitely worth mentioning for those who might be interested in a movie that is kind of just a bunch of these late night commercials strung together. So the name of the movie is Buffet Infinity. It is something else I have been watching this week.
Is it on VOD at this point?
It is on VOD. It is on VOD, so you can get it on VOD. And yeah, if you liked The Too Many Cooks and if you liked unedited footage of a bear and SCTV, I think you will like Buffet Infinity. Check it out. And congrats to Simon for the release of his film. All right, let's get to weekly plugs, folks. We're going to do weekly plugs. Weekly plugs, a part of show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I am trying to make 5 videos per week on my short form channels, including TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. So follow me on Instagram at instagram.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. One thing I've been trying to do is break down what's going on at the box office each week. It looks like it's going to be a really interesting summer. So check out my box office breakdowns, and you can follow me across all platforms, but I'm going to mention one of them, which is instagram.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. Follow me there, and you can get all the videos that I make every week. Devinder Hardware, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. We just talked about some news coming out of Computex last week, specifically NVIDIA's RTX Spark chip, and it's something that could potentially make PC laptops and desktops a lot more interesting. They're going to be very expensive, but it's kind of cool. So tune in to learn why.
And Jeff Cannata.
I do a video game podcast called DLC. It's the biggest video game week of the year every year. This is traditionally when E3 used to happen. E3 is dead, but now it has been replaced by Summer Games Fest. And so all the big platform holders, well, Nintendo hasn't really, but everybody is talking about games. There's massive announcements, big game reveals, and we covered all of it. It is the new episode just came out. Last night, Lana Bashinsky from Riot Games joined us to break down all the stuff from Sony. They got a new God of War game they announced. Wolverine looks amazing. We talked about Summer Games Fest with all its big reveals and then the Xbox conference as well. So it's an extra huge episode. We went for 2.5 hours and we barely even, and there's like so much more. It's a big, big, big week. And we just hit all the stuff you have to know if you like video games. Check it out, dlcpod.com.
I saw Asha Sharma gave away a free Xbox to all the fans in the audience at the Xbox game presentation. Jeff, were you like, man, I wish I was at that Xbox event?
You know, that happened to me once many, many years ago when they announced the Xbox 360. It was a weird thing. We had been going to E3 every year for the Totally Rad show. And the news came down that they're like, we have fewer seats this year. We're going to a smaller venue. Mm-hmm. And we have fewer seats. And Dan and Alex were like, ah, you know what? I don't like getting up early in the morning and driving all the way downtown LA and standing in line and doing all the thing. And I was like, well, I'll go. I still want to go. And then that was the year they gave away Xbox 360s to everybody in the audience. And Dan and Alex were so mad they didn't come.
Did you freak out? Like, I would have freaked out if that happened.
No, I try to have a shred of professionalism, Dave.
Okay. You know,
where I'm not being easily bought off by the corporation.
Okay.
That's where you and I are different.
I understand. I see. That's a little bit of a subtle shading of where you might be one way and I'm another. I get it.
That's right.
I get it.
That's right. Yeah. I have what they call, I don't know, integrity. That's what I try to maintain.
Is that what they call it? Because people have been telling me about that and I usually don't even understand what they're saying.
You should look into it. You should, I'm sure there's a TikTok video about it you can find.
I think when someone mentions it, I typically black out is what happens. Anyway, check out Jeff's DLC podcast. Guys, I've been trying to sell all my Ubermensch action figures.
Ubermensch.
I've been trying to sell all my Ubermensch action figures. something to think about as we head into our review of Masters of the Universe. But before we do that, I do want to mention that you can support this podcast at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and exclusive After Darks. Patreon.com/filmpodcast. Thanks to everyone who supports this podcast and helps to keep it going. Of course, we never want you to donate. If it in any way causes you financial hardship, you can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us or sharing about the podcast wherever you get it, including on YouTube at youtube.com/@thefilmcastpod.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, folks, it's time to get to our review of Masters of the Universe.
I never stopped trying to get back home.
Everything changed since you left.
It's all gone. Skeletor took my family. Yeah! And he destroyed our world. It's all my fault. I know how it feels to fail. Take the sword. Then when you fall, that's your chance to stand tall.
Because it's been difficult to cater to such a niche market. Wow. It's been niche. Difficult to cater it. To such a niche market.
I like it.
Thank you. Thank
I'm not mad at that one.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I just want to be clear. A lot of the jokes I get are from upjoke.com. Just let me. I do not write these.
What's up, joke? I don't know. What's up with you?
It's like Reddit for jokes. I do not write these. I feel cheated.
I thought this was all off the dome.
No, but yeah. I do spend quite a bit of time combing through really bad ones. so that I can have one.
Davinda, think of all the jokes he doesn't tell.
This is the cream of the crop, you guys, is what you're getting here on this podcast. So anyway, welcome to the Filmcast review of Masters of the Universe. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A young man on Earth discovers a fabulous secret legacy as the prince of an alien planet and must recover a magic sword and return home to protect his kingdom, end quote.
A fabulous secret, is it?
Yeah, I was like, fabulous. Fully aware on IMDb. Anyway,
somebody who was writing the IMDb, like, well, took a little artistic license there. Yeah. I liked it.
Fab. All right, guys. Before we get into talking about this actual movie, let's just talk briefly. Like, what was your relationship with the He-Man? Action figures, TV shows, movies, new TV show by Kevin Smith on Netflix. Where are you with He-Man? Devendra, was this a big part
of
your childhood?
I grew up with He-Man, but even as a kid, I was like, this thing exists to sell toys. I was fully aware of the sort of like construction of He-Man and why it existed. It was fine. I liked it, but I didn't watch the new thing. I'm not in love with this universe.
How about you, Jeff?
I mean, I loved it. I loved He-Man. I had Castle Grayskull. I had, you know.
Wow. Like,
the toy.
The toy. Wow.
The physical Castle Grayskull. Yeah, it was one of my prized possessions. I loved my Castle Grayskull. I had the trap door. It was awesome. And I had, you know, I had many of the He-Man. I adored the cartoon. I was all about it. I mean, it was 40 years ago, but it was, you know, I didn't watch the Kevin Smith reboot. I don't.
Same.
I don't have a lot of residual love for it, but at 8 years old, hell yeah. I loved it. Dude, those were among my favorite toys. They were so cool, and they were bigger than G.I. Joe, and they had, you know, they had really cool abilities.
Functions, right?
They could Ram Man's feet actually sprung forward. You know, there was... they had cool stuff. And one of the things that the movie doesn't touch upon at all, or this movie doesn't touch upon at all, that I thought was all the most awesome thing was He-Man's sword and Skeletor's sword, if you bought both of them attached to each other back to back to become a bigger sword, and that was the key that unlocked the door at Castle Grayskull.
I vaguely recall.
Ingenious.
Brilliant. It's so cool. Oh man, it blew my mind as a kid. I love those toys.
I played with the toys as well and watched some of the cartoons, but yeah, I wasn't like a huge diehard fan or anything. But yeah, it was a pretty solid part of my childhood. But Jeff, I guess since you're the biggest He-Man fan here, why don't we just start with you for the review? What were your thoughts about Masters of the Universe?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts about Masters of the Universe are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Now let's hear it, Jeff.
I suppose one cannot be blamed for mocking how these toys were named, but why should I see this big budget IP if the movie itself is ashamed?
Agreed completely, Jeff. Agreed completely. Yeah.
This movie it's crazy that this movie exists.
Yes.
Yes.
This is, as you said, $170 million probably on the low end. And that doesn't count.
Some people marketing are guessing it's closer to 200 plus probably another 100 on top for marketing and such.
$200 million for something that is embarrassed to exist? Like that is bonkers to me. And it's a shame because ostensibly you're marketing to people, you're using this IP that people have some affection for, or you wouldn't be using the IP, right? The IP is what gets people through the door. And then you're telling them, hey, guess what? We know this is so dumb. This is so stupid.
Every person who has gone into the movie has purchased a ticket.
Yes.
For a movie called Masters of the Universe.
To see He-Man. Yeah. And the whole movie is like, oh God, I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's called He-Man. He's called He-Man. I know. That's so dumb. We know it's dumb. You know it's dumb, right? It's like, but I got excited about this and wanted to see the movie be cool. Here's the thing.
The tone of the film is what Jeff's referring to. The tone is very self-mocking, like this is stupid, and we know it's stupid, and you're watching a stupid thing.
The movie starts, the first, I don't know, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, is I was like, wow, they're really doing it.
Yeah, they're going
I have never seen a better toys come to life in anything, right? This is the first, like, 10 minutes of this movie. We start in Eternia. We start with young Adam. And there's an action sequence that has many, many, many of the characters that if you like He-Man, if you collected the toys as a kid, if you were into it, it is that toy authentically come to live action in a way that, like, even Marvel movies haven't achieved. You know, it is really the attention to detail on all of them. Like, I could see the thing that was crazy to me about that opening sequence is I had like this visceral, tactile sense memory of how things felt in my fingers, like how Trapjaw's jaw hinge moved when I would mess with the toy as a kid. Like, I felt it again because I could see, because they got it so right, all the imagery.
Right. Like, and Skeletor is a skeleton, a skull with like a six-pack body.
Yeah.
Right? And you can see the sinews of the Skeletor muscles.
I mean, it's exactly how the toy was sculpted, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but for me, as somebody who grew up with those toys, and again, I'm not the biggest He-Man fan today. It's not the same to me as like Marvel, where I still retain this love. But it was an amazing thing, truly amazing thing, for me to sit there and go, man, I'm like having flashbacks to how it felt in my hand, like seeing the way that stuff was represented on screen. It was like, man, I totally remember that. I remember all of those characters. Oh, I remember owning that one. And if that's what you're going for, they knocked that out of the park. And for the first 10 minutes, it's doing like this reverent, authentic,
right,
totally bought into elevating this thing into a high budget, price is no object, visual effects laden spectacle. And I thought, wow, we're really doing it. We're really doing Masters of the Universe in a way that first movie in the 80s just couldn't achieve, could not even approach, right? And then the movie completely changes and it becomes this, you know, I have to believe that all the folks that gave money for this at Mattel are like, we need the Barbie thing. Barbie right. was a massive hit. We need to do the Barbie thing. Remember how Barbie like deconstructed the idea of the Barbie toy and how that resonated to an entire generation, multiple generations of women who played with those toys and bought those toys. We got to do that with He-Man. Except here's the problem. He-Man is an adolescent power fantasy. Barbie is what a bunch of men thought women should be into. And the idea of deconstructing what a bunch of men taught generations of women.
Barbie was invented by a woman, Jeff.
What?
Barbie was invented by a woman. Like, it was specifically a doll created because she did not think little girls had dolls like that to play with. Like, because dolls used to be just babies. Little girls get to play with babies. Barbie, the whole thing about Barbie, little girls get to envision themselves as grownups.
Okay. Well, I got that wrong. But I still think the central point is correct in that Barbie is this sort of this impression that was laid at the feet of women of here is an impossible ideal for you to try to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think the dynamic with which even though, you know, my sister, I played so many Barbies. I played Barbies like crazy because there was only girls on my block. So I played Barbies in trade for let's play tag and other stuff. But I think that the central relationship between Barbies that women have is very different from the central relationship that boys have with He-Man, which is like, hey, it's about a little kid who raises a sword and becomes awesome. And the movie is trying to kind of do the same things that the Barbie movie did, which is like, let's take that apart and let's really think about how that is. And I think that's it's misapplied here on a fundamental level. And it is, you know, applying sort of modern sensibilities to something. It is, you know, the main character is this kind of repressed adolescent, this Peter Pan. And I think that misses the point completely about what is interesting or what could be interesting about a He-Man character. And the fact that the movie is just like it is doing this on one hand, completely authentic representation of what these toys were. And on the other hand, the characters themselves that are in these outfits that are dressed up in these ridiculous costumes that are so true to what the action figures were. The characters themselves are saying things like, oh, what? Oh, what do you call me? What is my name? It's like Ram Man is not a stupid name unless you decide it's a stupid
right.
name. Your character right. can own that name. Especially if you literally ram people with your head all the time. And there's so many like sexual innuendo gags about, you know, there's a character named Fisto. So of course we got to make a sexual innuendo joke about Fisto. And it's like, well, no, just do what you did in the first 10 minutes and maybe we can all have fun with the nostalgia. Like you're in this nostalgia right. place. You've taken this thing and you've spent $200 million to make it look like a big budget movie. And now you're going to tell me that it was all dumb and it was all, and we should all be embarrassed and literally not going to use the word He-Man until like the last 2 minutes of the movie. And even then go, what? Ew. It's ridiculous. And the whole tone of trying to mix comedy. I love trying to mix comedy with action. I love that. I don't think any of the comedy in this movie works. I think we get the movie is way too long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. And so much of that is goofing around and doing these dumb things that just undermine the entire premise and make this the main character so unlikable and very little fun. Whereas when the movie kicks into high gear, like the action sequences aren't bad. There are some really cool visuals. And I think, you know, it's Jared Leto, but I think Skeletor is fun.
Like it's a good Skeletor. Yeah. Like he's done a great Skeletor.
One of the best parts, you know, terrible human being, but one of the best parts of the movie.
It's a fun take on Skeletor. And, you know, there's things about this movie that could have worked. It's just the whole take is bizarre. It's you spent all this money because seemingly you think there's value in this IP. And then the whole movie is telling me how valueless this IP is. So I was very disappointed with this. I think it's a train wreck.
I think what's so interesting is Travis Knight has said in an interview, the director of this film said, quote, "We do live in an age of detachment, of irony, of arm's length judgment. And that's not how I approach my work. I have sincere love for everything I do," end quote, which in my opinion, just does not match with the final result that we got in this film. But Devinder Hardwar, please share with us your thoughts on Masters of the Universe.
I disagree with everything Jeff said. Basically, just take what Jeff said and hit the opposite. I think that tone, that sort of self-aware tone, is kind of how you have to do this. And here's the thing. I don't know, like you said the first 10 minutes, Jeff, I don't know how you can look at this movie and say, oh, it hates He-Man. No, this movie fucking loves He-Man. There's He-Man. This movie is like the best Star Wars movie we've gotten in a very long time because it very much approaches it like the early Star Wars movies. Here's this amazing world with all these creatures. What's going on with them? What's going on with these powers? It builds a rich world. I think it does a great job of like giving us some of the stuff that was great in the series, like, or what I remember. Like I never had the toys. I was always very jealous of the kids who had all the toys. But yeah, I never had all the toys to play with, but I watched a lot of He-Man. And you cannot translate that. This is not Lord of the Rings. This is not like a thing where there is a sense of like, oh, there is sort of like there is a straightforward way you can take the story that can have gravitas. It is He-Man. It's about a man in underwear with a big sword fighting a man with a skull face. It is inherently silly. It's always been silly, and it was made to appeal to kids, and I totally get that. I totally get the power trip of that. This movie, I guess I can see your point, Jeff. Like, if you really, really love the property and you think it's not wise to poke fun at the things that I think are kind of obviously funny about He-Man and what's silly about it, it is ridiculous that we're going into theaters to see a He-Man movie in the year 2026. That is insane to me. The way you can kind of do it is sort of like, is to be self-aware about how some of this stuff is inherently silly, but also be like, you know, it's also still a cool world. These people with these crazy powers still exist, and they are represented pretty accurately from the show and from the toys, from what I can see. I had a lot of fun with this movie. I did not expect to, because I don't care much about He-Man or Masters of the Universe. But I will say, Travis Knight knows how to make a good movie. That's the thing. Like, he and his screenwriters, at least, like, gave us an in into this world. Adam, as he's portrayed here, I think is kind of, it is hilarious to take the characters like this is not a secret past of his. He knows where he comes from. He knows he's been transported to Earth, right? But to have his character be like, trying to fit into modern life, I guess as an orphan, but also be like, I got to find my secret sword, guys. I thought that was funny. We don't spend a lot of time there, but He-Man having a roommate who like, sort of doesn't believe him, but also kind of likes him as a good guy. I thought those bits were funny. And then we're out of the real world pretty quickly. I really like I've never seen Nicholas Galitzin in anything, but he did a good job of embodying that character. It is hilarious that him in the real world is sort of like, this guy doesn't have muscles, right? He's just wearing big clothes. Clearly he's just a nerd of some kind. It's that to me is the thing that kind of took me out of the movie, because it's hilarious. Right. It's just a movie.
It's hilarious because he very obviously is incredibly jacked.
That dude is built. He is jacked. He's not a shrimp. Maybe as a kid you could portray him as a shrimp, but by the time he's grown up, he ain't no shrimp. But yeah, I quite liked, I thought Jared Leto was a lot of fun. This, like, he's not a draw for me, but to fully embody the ridiculousness of Skeletor, I don't know how much post-processing they had to do for Jared Leto to sound like a Skeletor, but I thought it was, I'd like to imagine he just did that all himself. Like, he can just pull a real Skeletor out of anywhere. The way he portrayed Skeletor is a lot of fun. I think a lot of this movie also comes down to what do you think of Alison Brie in this movie? Because she does play a character named Eva Lynn. This movie to me seems like if Abed from Community had the chance to make a $200 million He-Man movie, it would kind of be this. And that's, and he would also cast Alison Brie in it in some fashion. I enjoyed like how silly she is and how like it's so overcranked and so silly. And at the same time, the action is great. And the sort of like realization of this world is a lot of fun. It is too long. This should be straight 2 hours max. This should not be creeping towards 2.5 hours. 90 minutes to 2 hours feels like a good time for this. But also, like, I had a lot of fun with it. And it's not my $200 million. You know, like it is Travis Knight and these folks convinced Amazon and a whole bunch of production studios to spend a shit ton of money on a He-Man movie. And I feel like he's not getting a sequel with this, most likely. So that's why it's 2.5 hours long. It's like, OK, I'm going to do as much He-Man as I can. Yes, Amazon, it has to be 2.5 hours as long. The kids love the He-Man. It's definitely too long. It'd be a better movie without being so long. But I like this movie a lot more than I thought I would. I think it's a great way to try to do this franchise. I think it's going to have a long life in the streaming world. You know, like it's very rare for us to get like a really deeply nerdy, geeky thing with a big budget. Also, like that has such a niche audience, right? Like Star Wars and the Marvel stuff, they're all trying to appeal broadly. They're trying to appeal to everyone. I don't think this movie tried too hard to appeal to everyone. This is like, you have to be a fan of He-Man and No Masters of the Universe to enter this theater. And I'm kind of for that. Like, it's not my money. I'm very glad somebody was able to do it in this way. Yeah. And I found it really enjoyable.
Man, Devendra, it's interesting because I think you were the least enthusiastic going into this review.
Yeah.
And now coming out of the theater, you're the most enthusiastic.
It helps
to
have no expectations sometimes.
I think the movie is fine. Like there are some fun sequences. One of the things you said, Devendra, that I thought was interesting was like, did the movie do enough to appeal to everyone? In my opinion, there's some really dark sequences in this movie. Like upsetting dark material that I'm like, oh, wow. And it often feels like the movie is at odds with itself. Alison Brie, I think, is just so talented. I loved her in movies like Together and obviously in Community. But she felt like she was playing this like SNL sketch is kind of the mode that I think she was in. And that's
Kristen Wiig is also in this movie.
Kristen Wiig's in this movie. Marina Baccarin.
And that's not the same as like other characters at various times were not playing it. Like Idris Elba, I don't think is in an SNL sketch. You know what I'm saying? And so it feels like the movie is often at
He is hamming it up.
A little bit.
He sees the outfit he's wearing. He's hamming it. Like he knows what movie he's in. I feel like maybe Alison Brie is a little like too much camp because the movie itself is trying to be like vaguely a little more restrained, but it's a tension. It's a real tension thing. And I think the character's name is Eva Lynn. The character, there's only so much you can do with her.
First of all, you say things, you say like, well, they had to do it this way. You know, Devendra, you say like they had to do it this way. And it's like, no, they didn't. They could have.
If you do it straight, it would be the dumbest shit in the world.
I disagree, dude. Guardians of the Galaxy, it's a talking raccoon and a tree man.
They joke about that.
I guess my name is
the very
Groot.
First thing is like, this is a talking raccoon. This is a talking, like they do like recognize the absurdity of the situation they're in and who these characters are.
I would say you're right, Devendra. Occasionally. It's like a little bit of spice. It's a little bit of like a bay leaf on the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like it's there, but you barely even know if it does anything. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's this movie, Masters of the Universe, it is pervasive throughout the entire film. Another really good comp, honestly, for this is Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Yeah.
I think is a movie that was not ashamed to be what it was.
No.
It wasn't like making fun of the concept of like Dungeons and Dragons.
That source material is also inherently more grounded. You know, there's a lot going on in Dungeons and Dragons that you can pull from and be like, okay, we don't have to like apologize for being silly. You're pulling from one of the corniest Saturday morning cartoons. I'm sorry. You're limited in how you can view these characters.
The cartoon, it's a fair point. The cartoon buys into itself. The cartoon is playing it straight.
The cartoon is a cartoon for children.
For children. And so, but I don't see why. I mean, this is, you're telling me you have to be a huge fan of Master of the Universe to even walk into the theater. So, like, honor that. The people that do take this seriously enough to have bought a ticket to it don't need to be told that, oh yeah, all the names were invented by 8-year-olds because they're, it's just all dumb and this is all stupid stuff.
I think those are little bits throughout the movie. Like, this movie is 80 to 90% of love letter to this, like, to the setting, to the, how they represent the characters, to doing like freaking a live action Skeletor that works. Yes, it does occasionally poke fun at itself, but if you were an adult with an attachment to Masters of the Universe, you should hopefully be poking fun at yourself a little bit. Just a little bit.
Jeff, because I feel like I've witnessed this like divergence in the reaction to this movie as well. Jeff, I've seen it. I'm in your camp, but other people, I think, completely agree with Devendra's point, which is like that they see this as a love letter and it's unironic and so on. And I'm like, there is a heavy ironic detachment.
I'm not saying it's unironic.
That I, David Chen, found very off-putting. Like, I did not appreciate it at all. And I think it would have been better if they played it straight. There's a world where Adam doesn't go to Earth and it just all takes place in the Masters. You know, it all takes place in that universe. And
are we saying like we should only deliver what fans want? Like,
no,
I think
we're not saying that at all. That is a straw man, Devendra. It is.
Okay. But it's also like you're saying if you're going to the theater, you should respect like the core audience is kind of what you guys have said.
I think, let me be clear. I think this take that they had is definitely a take that you can have, right? Like it is not like, oh, it's out of bounds that you can't do this. I think just for me and Jeff, it felt very off-putting because it felt like maybe they pressed the, hey, isn't He-Man silly button a few too many times, as opposed to just like, oh, occasionally, you know, like remember in X-Men 1, Bryan Singer, right? Yep. And, James Marsden says about the outfits. He's like,
yes.
What do you think we would be wearing? Yellow spandex, right? But that's it. Like, he doesn't like spend like 30 minutes talking about how it's yellow spandex is stupid. That's how this movie feels a lot.
And they
also
spend that entire movie not being anything like the comic.
Right. But this movie could have done that. It could have given all the things different names.
This movie is entirely the show. This version of Eternia is a one-for-one remake from the cartoon to this. They just occasionally say, like, this is kind of silly. And
all the stuff they invent for this movie is him on Earth.
Yes.
And all the stuff for him on Earth is, isn't it ridiculous that this thing would exist on Earth?
Yeah.
Isn't he an idiot for even... like talking about this stuff, and he's like he's a full ass grown man, and he's got like drawings of it. There's a drawing of a king in his bedroom that says dad on it.
Yeah.
It's stupid. and the movie is constantly telling you how stupid all of this stuff is. It's constantly,
is that you calling that stupid? Don't like their names.
The characters themselves are like, you're going to call me Ram Man? No.
Again, like, that's a short scene, but this is...
Dude, it's constant. The whole end of the movie is like, what do you call yourself?
Right.
I don't know. He-Man? Oh, God. Oh, God. He-Man? Like, the whole movie is that.
I disagree.
Yeah,
especially like the real world stuff. We are barely in the real world. It at least is like, what if this character Adam was shot out of Eternia as a child and had to grow up knowing everything that he knew in a world where like everyone thinks you're an insane person for believing in this fantasy land with talking cats, like talking tigers and everything. It's silly. It is very silly. The Barbie movie does this too. Like, it often comments on like how silly, like, what are they going to do when they hang out at night together? I don't know. It is a self-aware thing of like how silly some of these franchises and things are, while also trying to adapt it in a way that is, I think, relatable. Like the Adam, like, yeah, the Earth stuff didn't really need to be in there for that long, but it's also it doesn't take up that much of the movie. This movie is way too long. I think that's maybe part of the issue here.
I'm going to put this out there too, Devendra. I think another comp I would actually look at is Transformers. And sure. Specifically Transformers 1. And this does not... Transformers 1, again, plays it completely straight. I'm Optimus Prime. That guy is... They're Decepticons. Like, it plays it completely straight.
Good point.
We can talk about how, like, bad the movies end
it
up getting.
Play it,
like
it's, it does joke it, about it, the nature of it.
Occasionally. It occasionally jokes about it a little
it
bit.
It owns like, all that stuff, though.
That's
it
right.
owns it, the whatever you would term as silly...
Yeah,
it owns it, and it owns it in a way that like respects the people that actually would pay a ticket to see that.
I think so. I think there is a little bit of like occasional like wait a second, it's a truck, you know, like occasionally, but it's not like the whole tone of the thing. Anyway, let's get to spoilers for this movie, since we're already basically in spoiler territory. What are one of the issues I had with this film? Is this movie did not want to do a Surf Dracula with He-Man. Surf Dracula, the idea that, hey, it's only at the end of the movie that you see him become who he really is supposed to be. Instead, in this film, He-Man becomes He-Man about, I'm going to say, halfway through the film. Mm-hmm. Right, and in those the movie knows you want to see him be He-Man for like more than like 5 minutes.
You also
want to
see big action early, and it does give you the big He-Man-esque action early, yeah.
But the thing is, say what you will about the tenets of Surf Dracula, at least it's an ethos.
What?
And
No.
I felt like the message of like the ultimate message that he's supposed to learn is A, if you fall down, you get back up. B, there is a vision of masculinity that's not just punching people.
Yes.
And I don't feel like those effectively came across by the end of the film. I'm just going to put that out there.
I would agree.
And that you know, those aren't bad messages to have, but I think like the
what
idea
what does this
of,
have to do with the ethos of Surf Dracula? I'm just
well, because Surf Dracula, what I mean by that is there it would have been interesting, I think, to see him build up to this moment where he says, I have the power. Instead, when that moment happens halfway through the film, it feels completely unearned. And just like it comes out of nowhere. Oh, I have the power because I remember those being the words, and that's it. His character has not reached any meaningful progress at that point in time when he first becomes He-Man, in my opinion. And so that's what I mean by Surf Dracula.
The other thing that this movie has is defending Surf Dracula.
At least
this
in a
is
Surf Dracula situation,
to.
Like the climax is he's like, I have the power. And that would have been
okay,
like, oh, wow, amazing, cathartic. And instead, it's much more muddled in this film. I think.
The other thing is, you know, I may be coming off as some sort of He-Man purist, which I am not. But in the cartoon, when he becomes He-Man, it's a completely different persona. Mm-hmm. He has become a new being.
Right.
And that being is self-assured, is aware of what he is capable of, not capable of. He has shed his inhibitions, his fears, and he has become this bolder character. And the moment in the middle of the movie when he becomes He-Man, I expected that to happen. I mean, I just like expected it to happen because that's what I expected out of He-Man. And it's, you know, it's fine if they don't want to do what the cartoon did. That's totally fine. But I don't think it works to have him become He-Man and still be this little boy.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's right.
I wished in that moment that we could have seen him actually be filled with a new sense of power, frankly. He has the power, right? Let's be He-Man. And he is not. And it is it's weird and dissonant to me. Go ahead.
Honestly, a really good comp, Jeff, that you'll appreciate is Captain America: The First Avenger.
Right.
Yes. Right. Where you see him as like the small guy, and he's kind of like a slightly different person when he's the small dude, and then he becomes Captain America, and it's like, oh wow, that's a really big moment when he's transformative. This is just the same guy. Like he doesn't even change body type or anything. He's the same guy the whole way.
He just sheds clothes.
He just sheds clothes, right? And it makes it less impactful when really when he's like by the power of, like I have the power, you want that to be like holy like what an
you
amazing
turn into
moment
the Hulk, right? It's
right.
When Bruce Banner turns into the Hulk, he's a completely different thing now.
But Devendra, it worked for you. It worked for you.
I mean, I agree. It could have done better. It could, like, clearly that's like one of the big things that, like I said, it's really funny. This is a guy walking around with big muscles in the real world. And yeah, the He-Man character doesn't really change much. It didn't really bother me too much. It would have been nice if they tried more like Captain America, the First Avenger, which I've rewatched that movie. I like that movie quite a bit. I don't think the sort of scrawny tech that they built for Chris Evans really looks that great, but they at least tried something. There are other ways they could have gone about doing that for sure. Like, could you have shot the Earth stuff before he got pumped and then let him get pumped?
Yeah, that would have been so interesting.
That would have been cool.
Like if they had done some part of the movie before he got to be, but it takes months and months.
We have the technology to turn, like, we have the technology to de-age people by decades.
Right.
Can you have a technology to de-swole somebody?
Yes.
Like, maybe, I mean, that's just de-swole him a little bit.
Yeah, that's literally what they did to Chris Evans.
Except that he looks like freaking Golem. He looks like an unhuman.
He looks pretty good. I think it's
well, they wanted to make him a real, real, you know, scrawny wimp.
Yeah.
They made him super scrawny to the point where he just looked like, are you Golem's brother or something? How scrawny are you as a human being?
But I think he looks good. I think he looks good in that film.
He does not look like a believable person to me. But I'm saying it is now.
No one could be that skinny and wimpy.
It is now nearly 20 years after Captain America, the First Avenger. We should have the ability to de-swole more subtly.
I think they were interested in that. I mean, interestingly, I sound pathetic, but the cartoon, he was always the same size between the two, which was weird.
Mm-hmm.
They do kind of do the Surf Dracula thing, because the end of this movie is when, I mean, the very last shot of this movie is him astride Battle Cat.
Yep.
You know, that's where you want to start the next movie, which is never going to happen, but you know, that's finally achieving Surf Dracula dumb. We're now a surfing vampire by the end of this movie. And it's like, no, I'm fine. But we spent 2 hours and 20 minutes just to get to the starting point. That's where I think it's Surf Dracula. But
any thoughts on the post credits scene, guys? I was out of there.
What happened? Tell me.
I was ready for She-Ra to show up, but
yeah. I was happy we get a bit of Orko. That was fun.
Yeah.
Come on.
Orko is fun. I'm surprised Orko didn't show up earlier. I don't know why Orko didn't show up earlier.
Did your audience have a reaction? To be clear, She-Ra shows up in the post credits.
Oh, right? She does.
Yeah. And who plays She-Ra? I'm curious, like, if your audience had any reaction to that. I've seen some cam footage of, you know, audiences reacting like, oh my gosh, amazing, She-Ra's, you know, and obviously she was a big part of the original of the original franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So
was she played by anybody special?
She was played by an actor who actually gave away her appearance in the movie, but I think she is gonna be like, they shot it in such a way that they can cast anyone as She-Ra for the next one.
Right.
But I don't think there is going to be a next one. So
listen, Orko was my She-Ra, and that was with the mid credits, like basically right after the credits began, he appeared. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Love me some Orko.
I will say, as somebody who only had a vague recollection of the cartoons and action figures, this movie did really feel to me like, oh, they're really just making this to sell action figures. Like,
they don't even sell action figures on these guys anymore.
Well, what I mean is that it's like all these characters with all these like weird abilities, and it's like they get no character development at all, and they just show up to do their thing and flex their ability, and that's it. And it's like, and they're, you know, the name, we already talked about the names, but it's like it just felt like, wow, this must be what people feel like when they walk into a Marvel film and they haven't seen any of the Marvel movies. You know,
maybe,
like,
except it doesn't say Mattel at the opening of a Marvel movie, right? And it's like, this is the big reminder, this is a toy company. This comes from a toy company. This exists for a very specific reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Devendra, I am really glad that you had a good time with this.
I did.
And I had an okay time. You know, I think the movie is fine. I think the movie's fine. Like, it's not terrible. I wish it was less ashamed of itself, but it's not terrible. And honestly, if I had watched this movie when I was 10 years old, I think I would have been like, this is amazing. I love this film.
For sure.
Really?
I think so. Man,
the adaptations of things we got like when we were 10, you know, or like when I was 10, were things entirely ashamed of what they were. The Super Mario Brothers movie. So yes. many of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, but that's
Street
why I didn't
Fighter.
Like that movie.
Yeah, but that yeah. was a, that's a bad movie, though.
That's a bad movie. And you know what this is? You know what this is? This is an accurate representation.
But
of
you know
the
what's not ashamed of itself? Star Wars is not ashamed of itself,
how,
right?
I mean, how could it be? Because it is. It is but a thing building its own self mythology.
Like Harrison Ford was like, "You can write this, but you can't say this."
Yeah.
What is this nonsense I'm spouting? Half the critics that went to saw it were like, "What is this gobbledygook?" But Star Wars actually was like confident enough to say, "Hey, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. We're entertaining kids." And this movie is not. I think the other thing that's weirdly dissonant is that. It is made for 40-year-olds. This movie is made for 45-year-old dudes, and it knows that because it's constantly making weird sexual innuendo jokes. And I don't think this movie is made for 10-year-olds at all. I would not have wanted to take my 10-year-old to this. I did not. I don't think he would have liked it.
Right?
Not,
that
he
part
doesn't
even
have any reference to this toy.
And there's that part when He-Man brutally slaughters all of Skeletor's men in such like gruesome fashion. I was like, whoa.
That's all kid fun. Come on. That's what He-Man
like
does.
He like kind of like torturing some of them. Like he like shoves one of them into spikes and shit. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is horrible. Anyway.
He-Man, have some dignity. Have some decorum, He-Man.
I'm glad you guys got more out of this than I did. I thought this movie, I thought the visuals were really amazing and like Mechaneck and like how everybody moved and it just all felt so well done and literally everything else about it I just
we didn't even mention the Dolph Lundgren thing but I was like in any most of the time that is cringe that is pure garbage and at the same time Dolph Lundgren it is so great to see him on the big screen and just like give the nod. It reminds me of Schwarzenegger did it for Vin Diesel at one point, I think for the Rundown or not for Vin Diesel, for The Rock in The Rundown. There's a point where The Rock walks past Schwarzenegger and he's like, good luck.
It felt a little stilted to me, you know, it felt very much because it's like, why would he be needing to give him why a pep talk at all? Like it makes no sense to me anyway, but I agree. It's the concept of it is nice. But yeah, it just felt stilted, very much like a lot of stuff. It felt very self-conscious, like many things in this film, you know? And so,
All of it felt so apologetic. It's like we were apologizing to Dolph Lundgren in a weird way. You know, it's like,
I mean, he deserves an apology for that movie. So.
He got paid.
I'm sorry. You have to go through that, Dolph Lundgren.
Whose quote is it? That's what the money is for?
Mm-hmm. John Hamm.
I don't know how much he got paid for that movie, but you know.
Well, folks, at the end of the day, despite some of the things we may have said, it is really impressive that Travis Knight made a movie. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Disclosure Day. You guys psyched for this one?
I actually am. Yeah.
Or as they call it here, O Dia da Revelação.
Amazing.
That's what it's
called.
Jeff,
guess what Travis Knight is making next?
What?
Just guess. It was recently referred to on this podcast. He's doing Piranesi. Piranesi.
Oh.
He's making a Piranesi movie. Oh. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
The question is, will that do better than Back Roof? You know? Which is going to be hard to beat. Going to be hard to beat. All right. Anyway.
Disclosure Day, I'm really
excited. This is one of my most anticipated films of the year.
Oh, boy.
Look forward to it and our conversation here on the Filmcast. They are Jeff Cannata and Devendra Hardwar. I'm David Chen. We'll see you later.